Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting, but not video streaming today because we're upgrading our video streaming service. But we have a lot to share. We're going to talk about the latest from the Salk Institute about cannabinoids being able to remove plaque that would otherwise lead to Alzheimer's, meaning getting rid of the proteins from your brain cells. That's good information. We're also going to talk about how parsley and dill help fight cancer from the Moscow Institute of Physics and Technology, and how stress leads to rapid spread of cancer from Monash University in Australia. And a whole lot more, including how white tea could help you look younger, from Science Daily. A special commentary today by Chris Hedges from Truth Dig 2008 all over again. Also today, we're going to look at Big Pharma and how they're used to paying everybody off. And when they have unlimited amounts of money to spread around to doctors, professors, journals, media, then suddenly we believe their lies, and we shouldn't. And we have a lot of others coming at you as well. So that's our program. Let's begin. Having a meeting even today, right after this program, with some people who are scientists, and they're looking at the latest on the cannabinoids, and they're going to be sharing some insights. And they had heard I was of the belief that certain other nutrients bound to that will actually enhance it. In point of fact, no one's looking at that, but they should. But just by itself, just the cannabinoids, which are the active ingredients, we've seen some remarkable results with brain cancers, lung cancers. Yeah, this is from the Salk Institute. Quote, Salk Institute scientists have found preliminary evidence that the THC and other compounds found in marijuana can promote the cellular removal of amyloid beta, a toxic protein associated with Alzheimer's disease. That's good, because while these exploratory studies were conducted in neurons grown in a laboratory, they may offer insight into the role of inflammation in Alzheimer's disease and could provide clues to developing better non-toxic approaches. And that was publishing in Aging and Mechanisms of Disease. We don't think about something like a parsley or kale or arugula that can heal, yet they do and have historically. It's just that we're not eating a lot of it, nor eating it regularly. Most people, if they see parsley on a plate, they think it's just an ornament and they set it to the side. Rarely do they eat it. They should. In fact, they should be juicing parsley and dill. This is from the Moscow Institute of Physics and Technology. A team of Russian scientists had a lot of insight after they did this, where they looked at novel agents with anti-cancer activity. And they found that parsley and dill, the seeds, are very strongly anti-cancer. They help fight cancer, and they published this in the Journal of Natural Products. Quote, both improvements of existing therapies and search for innovative approaches are essential components of a quest to treat cancer. Our combined team developed a simple method of producing a ganzovian A and its structural analogs, which inhibit the growth of human tumor cells, using feasible building blocks from nature. And what were the feasible building blocks at the base of this? Parsley and dill. In fact, they found no growth for cancer cells. And that's terrific. Well, currently, the mainstream method of treating cancer is chemotherapy. And the treatment tries to inhibit the growth of cancer cells by disrupting the process of cell division, what is called mitosis. Now, cancer cells divide much more frequently than normal cells, and therefore they are more susceptible to the effects of the chemotherapy. For example, the number of melanoma cells doubles every 3 days, whereas the number of their healthy progenitors, the melanocytes, increased by 15% even when cell division is stimulated. And but when you introduce something else into the equation, you can actually speed up the cancer cells dying. And they found that sea urchins can do this, that the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli sprouts, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, the mustard family, cabbages, kale, watercress, it can also do this. And also you want to increase natural stem cells. And one of the ways you increase natural stem cells in the body is with the dark greens. Yesterday I was having a juice, and it was a large juice, 16 ounces, wheatgrass and ginger juice in one. And someone says, how in the world can you handle that? I'd throw up if I had that. And I said, well, I would have also, but my body develops to this. It takes time. Why do you do it? Well, because I know that it's building new cells in my body, and I want those new cells, and that's helping my body's immune system and the energy throughout my meridians. The 365 meridian points are all stimulated. It's like giving your body an internal acupuncture when you're taking your dark green vegetable juices. So the more dark green vegetables, juices, or foods that you eat or drink, the healthier your immune system. That means that more will be available to stimulate the fight of cancer versus eating sugar in hot dogs and hamburgers, which actually depress the immune system and then allow cancer to manifest. So when we're taking a parsley or dill and we're taking it in a more concentrated form, then we're going to help the body with its cancer prevention and fighting ability. From Monash University in Australia, they did some work and found that stress leads to rapid spread of cancer. A team of Melbourne researchers have discovered that stress leads to cancer spreading more rapidly throughout the body. And that is important. We've known for a long time that stress can lead to cancer. This is a study that shows that stress now drives metastasis to other parts of the body. And hence being calm and relaxed, more meditative, laughing, humor, all that helps stop the spread of cancer. So one more reason why we have to implement using the mind to stimulate the immune system. Aerobic exercises and CBD in CBD in women with fatty liver disease. This is the North American Menopause Society, published in their journal Menopause. And what they have found is that women who are exercising aerobically, like walking or biking or jogging, these were in postmenopausal women with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That's mainly due to fructose and sugar. And that leads to cardiovascular disease. In fact, people who have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease are far more likely to have a heart attack or stroke and diabetes. If you have abdominal obesity, if you have a big belly, you're more likely to have heart attacks. If you have high blood pressure, heart attacks. So if you can exercise, you're going to reduce the amount of the fat in your liver, and that allows you to lessen your likelihood of having a heart attack. Also, we're going to look at the idea that people are not consuming everything they should in the way of beverages, but one beverage you could consume that would be very healthy for you would be white tea. Now, white tea, according to Science Daily, and this was also done at the School of Life Sciences, Kingston University in southwest London, they found that cup of white tea, and this time of year you could have a iced tea, reduces your risk of cancer, lessens your likelihood of rheumatoid arthritis, and even helps with age-associated wrinkles. And researchers from Kingston University teamed up with Neil Jard Remedies to test the health properties of 21 plant herbal extracts. And they discovered that all the plants tested had some potential benefits, but were intrigued to find that white tea was outperforming all of them. Results showed that YT prevented the activities of the enzymes which break down elastin and collagen, which can lead to wrinkles that accompany aging. Now, these enzymes, along with oxidants, are associated with inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. Quote from the study, "These enzymes and antioxidants are inflammatory diseases that they're present, and the inflammatory conditions suppressing the activities of these excess components has been the subject of decades of research. We were surprised to find such high activity for the white tea extracts in all five tests that were conducted." In lay language, it means that when you drink white tea, you're suppressing the oxidative factors. You're lessening oxidative stress and pro-inflammatory cytokines. And that's good. That's what you want. And finally, scientists find evidence linking Parkinson's to autoimmune disease. This is the University of Montreal, McGill Universities. And they found that they've discovered that two genes associated with Parkinson's disease are key regulators of the immune system, providing direct evidence linking Parkinson's to autoimmune disease. Now, why is that important? Well, it's simple. Because the moment you take in any form of diseasing food, beverages, you are stimulating the body's immune response. So let's say every day you have sugar in a beverage, you have a cola, you have some artificial sweetener, let's say you eat a hot dog or hamburger or pizza. What you're doing is you're repeating a pattern where the immune system gets hit every single day. It then is just a matter of time until one day the immune system cannot get back up to where it was. So now you end up in an autoimmune condition where you can actually have the immune system overstimulated. So now it's attacking its own internal tissue, causing an autoimmune disease, or it collapses, in which case you're more susceptible to bacterial infections, viral infections. In either case, you do not help yourself or your aging or your lifespan when you're eating and drinking the wrong things. Same way with stress and thinking the wrong things or being around the wrong people. People who create drama, stay the hell away from them. Get them out of your life. It's not worth it. I don't care if you're having good sex. I don't care if they're company. I don't care if you're lonely and you want someone to, you know, talk with. You're going to end up dying sooner and you're going to be sick. Because stress from drama and other people's ideas about you and using you as an emotional punching bag is killing you. It isn't worth it. Say goodbye to them, close the door, and live a longer life. And that is why everything we do, everything each day, has a consequence, even seemingly simple things like, should we talk with someone that we know is going to start arguing? What's the point? Should we work in toxic, negative environments? Should we be around people who are always tense and always projecting out? To the degree that you have control over your life and environment and the circumstances, then you're going to live a longer and healthier life because your immune system is going to be stronger because you're taking care of it. That's what it means. And also, antibiotics can stop the growth of new brain cells and impair memory. This is the latest in cell reports. It's been known that antibiotics cause problems in your gut, disrupting the population of good, healthy microorganisms and increasing the vulnerability to a variety of infectious diseases. But evidence is now emerging that antibiotics, with the ability to kill gut bacteria, also have the ability to stop the growth of new brain cells in the hippocampus, the area of the brain associated with memory. And therefore, memory and immune system and gut health are all connected. How so? Well, in this study, they found that a type of white blood cell communicates between the brain, the immune system, and the gut. But antibiotics were found to greatly diminish the presence of these particular white blood cells. likely causing the reduction in generation of new brain cells and worsening memory observed in this laboratory experiment. Now, there's a large body of research on how eating animals end up getting the antibiotics animals were fed into our bodies, and over a period of time, this totally disrupts our normal, healthy gut microbiome, or our gut bacteria, that in turn could end up adversely affecting your brain cells and impairing your memory. Good bacteria, good memory. Bad bacteria, bad memory. Antibiotics, bad memory. Bad bacteria. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come back. We have a lot more to share. Please stay with us. Nice having with us, everyone. A couple of thoughts concerning Brexit. First and foremost, what is the European Union? The European Union holds sovereignty over most of the political decisions and the currencies of 28 nations, including Great Britain. As a result, these unelected, and most importantly, unaccounted for bureaucrats, meaning no matter what they do, you have no power to throw them out of office. And part of what makes a democracy, or for that matter a republic, essential is that we have some control over the people and their actions who are supposed to be representing our interest. The trouble is the European Union represents first and foremost the interest of the lobbyist and the major corporate entities, the neoliberal parties. They're aligned with people out of the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the globalists. That's who they listen to. That's who they get their talking orders from. Recently, a person who had an opportunity in Great Britain to meet one of the top people within the European Union found, after spending some time with him, that the people they were listening to, meaning the people that the European Union leaders were listening to, were the lobbyists. The people coming with special interest were lobbying them, and that's who they listened to. If you want to look at how bad the TTIP trade agreement is and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, just look at the European Union, because it's the living manifestation of both. So who's speaking for the people? Who's speaking for the poor? Who's speaking for the working class? Who's speaking for the small business person? Who's speaking for the citizen? Not this massive, cancerous growth called the European Union. If countries were able to get out of the European Union and go back to their original currency, then they could go around the world and they could select the people they want to trade with, they want to buy from, they want to do business with, and set the terms that are not disadvantageous to their own nation and their own resources. They could create their own currency at zero interest out of their own treasury, as we should have done a long time ago by eliminating the Federal Reserve and having our national treasury print money as we need it at without interest. Right now we're paying over $600 billion a year just to service the interest on the debt. The debt does not go down, it continues to go up. But if you had that power, you could then forgive debt. Right now, look at Greece. All the debt in Greece is being paid by the pensions and the privatization of their services, their water service, their gas service, their electrical services. So if you cannot pay back the debt that did not benefit the average person in the first place, then you're stuck. But if Greece exits the European Union, goes back to the original currency, then they can forgive all their debt. Just say, too bad, it didn't benefit, it was all based upon corruption of Wall Street and the international bankers, and let them take that haircut and then start over and then do a few things better. Don't allow your military-industrial complex, which you don't need to begin with, to reign sovereign and buy billion-dollar submarines from Germany as insider deals. Don't allow the rich to get away with not paying taxes in Greece, which they didn't, almost never. Don't allow bloated bureaucracies. Don't have 16 people to do one job. Put money into infrastructure. Put money into small businesses, because at the end of the day, in every single country, they are the backbone of the economy. Allow your currency to be low enough in value that then everybody wants trade with you, because what you sell them, other people can afford. If people want to take a vacation this summer, the best place to go would be start in England, because you get in a great country to visit. You'd be paying a whole lot less, 30% less than a year ago. But if you make your currency too high, nobody can afford your product, or far few. And you're not going to be left adrift. You've got a lot of countries out there, like Russia and China and India and Brazil and Argentina and South Korea, that love to do business with you. So you're not going to fall off the map, but at least you'll have your sovereignty back. You can take back all those privatized ventures, take back your airports, take back your ports, take back your islands from those who exploited their power with inside the European Union and the financial institutions to steal them. So take back your lives. That is what the European Union is afraid of, in Germany in particular. What a fascist group of people over in Germany today running it. So you see, those who've been screaming the end of the world, no, you lost $3 trillion in 3 days. But right now, the Wall Street equity market's about 17,200. It should be at 6,000. It's all a bubble. Great Britain's decision to leave the European Union has wiped out some bankers, but they'll be bailed out, like the Royal Bank of Scotland and HSBC. But global speculators won't be bailed out. They will turn, as they did in 2008, according to Chris Hedges, to governments to rescue them from default. My concern is that our government, certainly under President Obama and likely under President Clinton, will immediately bail them out, telling us that we need them. We do not. That is a lie. Remember, the massive amounts of profit that are made on Wall Street are almost always made from money that was given to them, not money they earned legitimately. So their economy, the economy of the very wealthy, the economy of those that can have $100 million apartments and fly, you know, in private jets and have their own yachts, that money doesn't go around the community 67 times as it did in the 1950s, where a dollar would pass around hand to hand to hand. It doesn't. It goes to them. So Wall Street really isn't a part of the real economy. And without them being bailed out, they would all be bankrupt. So how smart are they? They talk about socialism they hate. The mockery of that concept is that socialism has kept the rich in America alive. Without socialism, all of the banks, all the major corporations would have failed. They've been living off that. The energy cartel subsidies, the farming cartels subsidies, and Wall Street financial markets subsidies, the medical industrial complex subsidies. They're all living off subsidies. Take away their subsidies. See how many of them are smart enough with their MBAs out of Wharton to last a year. I don't see any of these people being smart enough to have their own small business. Yet these are the people we don't help, we don't bail out, and they're the largest single group of employers in the United States. So let us not bail out any more of these people. Now the question is, will the American public passively permit another massive bailout of the banks? Will it accept more punishing programs of austerity to pay for this bailout? Will a viable socialism rise out of the economic chaos to halt further looting of the U.S. Treasury and the continued reconfiguration of the economy into neo-feudalism? Or, according to Chris Hedges, will a right-wing populism with heavy undertones of fascism ascend to power because of a failure on the part of the left to defend a population once again betrayed? Whatever happens next will be chaotic. Global financial markets, which lost heavily on derivatives, are already in free fall. The value of the British pound has dropped by over 9%. The British bank stock prices over 25%. And this decline has wiped out the net worth of many Wall Street brokerage houses and banks, leaving them with negative equity. So the Brexit vote severely crippled and perhaps killed the Eurozone and happily stymies trade agreements, because if there's anything that will put the brakes on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it is this Brexit. And also it challenges the viability of NATO and the American imperial designs of Eastern Europe and the Middle East. So the British public's repudiation of neoliberal economics also has the potential to upend the presidential elections. So it's interesting what's evolving. And I'm hopeful that we, as a people, will all take an honest look. Now, I had someone ask me, did I really think it was realistic, my suggestions on how to counter terrorism? Think of it this way. What are you left with if you do not do this? You're left with both the ideology sponsored by the neoliberal community, both conservative and liberal together, suggesting that we have to have regime changes in other countries. We must support the military dictatorships or the despotic regimes with more weapons because too many of their countries' citizens, especially the poor, are rising up and therefore represent a threat to the monarchies in Bahrain or in Egypt, or whether it's a theocracy or whether it's a military group, it's still a threat. And America does business with the theocrats and the plutocrats. We don't do business with average citizens. So we supported Mubarak when the Spring Awakening was happening. And we supported other countries, but always those in power, no matter how ruthless or brutal they were. So that's one way. And then we were saying, oh, there should be troops on the ground, and we should do more drones, and we should knock them all out. We're already spending $1.6 trillion in our military-industrial complex. How much of that do we actually need to spend to be safe? About $200 billion. So what if we stop spending that $200 billion? What if in 1 year we stopped the gave $200 billion to just what we needed for our own defense, and then forgave all student debt, $1.2 trillion. So no student had any debt whatsoever. We would still be left with at least $200 billion. Then put that into helping to build affordable homes or take over homes that were foreclosed on and then take back the mortgages on them at pennies on the dollar and then give those to people who would qualify. Now, the deal is that if they qualified for a free home, in effect, they couldn't sell it and they couldn't get loans against it. So you stop this whole cycle of using your home like an ATM machine, of living through debt. In other words, stop living through debt. We are totally bankrupt. We will never be able to pay our debt. But we're having plenty of money to pay for this accumulated debt of the war machine and other areas that do not benefit us. So my suggestion was simple, real quick. Stop all of our nuclear proliferation, and that saves us over $1 trillion. Take all the money out of the C-35, that's $1.5 trillion. We've already spent $700 billion for nothing. Stop it. Cancel the contracts. Do not do any more business with any nation at all don't buy their products, including oil, don't ship them arms. If they engage in supporting terrorists of any type, either giving sanctuary, intelligence, or weapons, like Saudi Arabia does, Kuwait does, Egypt does, Bahrain does, United Arab Emirates do, those seven nations, and you stop it, and Qatar. So suddenly those people, if the American market dries up, they'd be overthrown by their own people, and also they would go bankrupt. So that means that those people then have to go out and get those terrorists that they, the ISIS, the al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda, they've been funding, harboring, including Turkey in their own country, and they have to destroy them. They have to shut it down. And if you shut down the flow of money, you shut it down. There were 12,000 tankers, 12,000 taking oil from Iraq, stolen from Iraq, and from Syria, stolen from Syria, and bring it through Turkey. The United States did not bomb a single one of those trucks for 14 months. Russia came in and blew them up. That stops the oil. Now, close down all those bank accounts. We know all because we have every single bank transaction in the world recorded. We know who's sending money for what, and we know a legitimate transaction from one that's not. And you close down the banks. You close down their supply of funds. Then you don't ship many more weapons, and you start confiscating weapons and destroying them. That is how you end terror. Then you go in and you start rebuilding. You help those people whose communities have been destroyed, including in Palestine, and you help them in every country. You provide them with water, electricity, food, self-sufficiency in food, and housing. That's our responsibility because we caused their problem, as well as others who were involved, who gained. And then we stop regime change. We close down 16 of the federal agencies involved, including Homeland Security, in this stupid, mindless effort to think that these agencies, their employees, or their policies are actually helping us. All they do is outsource to private contractors, and the private contractors have lobbyists and former admirals and people and legislators and senators who go right back into those offices and secure those contracts. All we're doing every day, 24/7, are feeding billions of dollars a day into private contractors' hands who are smart enough to know how to game the system. So stop it. Outlaw all lobbying. Make it a federal crime. Life imprisonment and solitary confinement if you're ever caught lobbying for any corporation in America. When you go to Washington, you go on behalf of the citizens who elect you. They're allowed to come in and see you, communicate with you. That's what you're there for. And you'll see how few people go into politics. Take all the money out of politics. Have all elections be in a simple lottery cycle. You're allowed to go forward. You're encouraged to go forward. Give your programs, your policies, what you would do, what you wouldn't do. And then let the people decide in a series of lotteries, I like this person, I don't like that. No debates, just let them tell us what they're about, what they will do, what they're qualified to do, and how they would do it. At the end, then we see who's there to serve the public interest. Make all offices in 3 years only. You can never again run for any office. You got your 3 years, and that's it. Yeah, changes things. Then have an independent group of scholars, experts in given fields, go in and audit every single agency of government, and then bring those, do the great surgery. All of our government agencies are massive, corrupt, self-serving cancers upon the body politic. Bring them down to where we control, we the people control the bureaucracies there to serve our interests. Stop all spying on all citizens. Arrest every person working for any intelligence agency that's ever illegally spied and bring them in to trials. Give them a chance. You tell the truth, you walk free. If you lie, the rest of your life in prison. And everything you own is confiscated. Yeah, truth and reconciliation. Thus far, no one is ever accused or found guilty of crimes against humanity at any level from any bureaucracy or any governmental agency. Unless you're a whistleblower wanting to report on what's wrong, then they'll throw you in prison. Go after all those people who have engaged in illegalities at the government level throughout history. If they're alive, bring them to trial. that would offer some deterrence. Don't bail out any more corporations. If they fail, let the stockholders deservedly receive their karma in this lifetime. Those greedy bastards deserve to lose every penny they've invested. I don't care who it is. If you're in the business of making money and you don't care about the ethics or morality of how you make it, do not expect me or anyone else to bail you out when your worthless ass has failed. You never share your profits. You never share the rewards of your greed. Why should we share the small amounts that we have with you? Is there something wrong with that? And yet, they never share anything, but they want us to share what we have when they fail. That's logic upside down. So you want to end terrorism? Have religious groups, not those that we typically think of, but more progressive ones, go in and meet and encourage people of all religions not any longer to support that which in any religion, even offshoots of religions or even grossly maladaptive parts of a religion, including terrorism as a manifestation of any religion, do not allow people to be able to offer that and terrorize everyone. The people can stand against the butchers if they believe in what they are willing to say and challenge, and then have the religious leaders there as their guides. If everyone who was good and honest stood up in every religion for what was good and honest and moral in every religion, you wouldn't have very many places for those who have abused and used and maladapted from within their religion the opportunity to exercise their hate and their barbarism. Now, in a moment after this break, we're going to come back, have a short piece about Hillary Clinton's likely Pentagon chief. Man, they've been watching too many of these zombie films. We're then also going to hear about average citizens. Just ask about Mount Rushmore. And you're going to think, whoa, and these people are voting? Good luck with that. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. From all over the world, I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to share a few ideas that see if this makes sense to you. When it comes to striking at the heart of terrorism, the neocons, many people on the left and right, suggest that we have to go in there with drones, boots on the ground, Air Force, and we have to kill every last one of the ISIL, ISIS, Nusra, Al-Qaeda, terrorists. Okay, what's the likely outcome? More often than not, you're going to destroy a lot of civilians. The normal ratio is 93 innocent civilians killed for every terrorist. Then you're going to destroy the area itself, putting massive amounts of depleted uranium, which is forever toxic, and cause birth defects and cancers. And yet, all it's going to do is cause another whole generation of wannabe terrorists to come forward. I believe that we have to have a different approach. And here's my approach. I believe that first and foremost, we should stop glamorizing all violence. I think that we should take an honest look at how violent we become as a society. With the extreme sports, everything now is is taking something to an unimaginable limit of human violence, causing pain and suffering. Even in my personal opinion, the Food Channel has succumbed to this, where they no longer simply show you a chef preparing some meals and how you could do it, like the old James Beard or Dorothy Child, but instead they put people in unnecessary competition against each other under very tight time restraints to have a winner, which also means the humiliation of those who didn't win. There's kind of an excoriation. You didn't win because this, and you won because of that. And none of it's real. None of it would we face in our daily lives. Why not put happy people doing wonderful, healthy dishes on television and show people how to do it, how to grow it, how to process it? But we don't. We have to win at everything. If you got it to the Super Bowl because you had an outstanding record, you were virtually undefeated. If you're defeated in the Super Bowl, suddenly you're a loser. It's this mindset that permeates every part of our society. So first we have to take an honest look at how violent we've become and what it means to we as a society. Then I believe that we have to stop all nuclear proliferation. We're going to spend over $1 trillion. That's nearly enough to forgive all student debt. That's enough to de-ghettoize American cities. We could do so much better with that money than spending on nuclear weapons. It helps the industry that lobbied for it. It doesn't help us. And we then start a whole nuclear campaign, getting Pakistan and India and China and Russia and Israel and United Kingdom and France to all start getting rid of all their nuclear weapons. Then we make it against our laws to do any work with a terrorist. For example, in Turkey and Saudi Arabia, they're known for not just harboring ISIS and ISIL members and al-Nusra and al-Qaeda, but also funding them, giving them support. And we have to stop that. So you give sanctuary, training, treatment, money to a terrorist organization or individual, we no longer will take your oil. We'll no longer give you anything. Stop trading in arms. We are the nation's largest purveyor of weapons of destruction. So we give arms to Kuwait, and then Kuwait turns around and sells them on the market, and then they end up in the hands of terrorists. Cut off the supply of money by stopping all of the illegal transport of oil. They're taking oil illegally from Iraq and Syria, bringing it in through Turkey, and then selling it on the black market. We can stop that. And we didn't touch one of their 12,000 trucks in these caravans that go on for miles. And we saw it. We knew it was happening. But Turkey's one of our partners. So we say we want to go against terrorism, and yet we're supporting countries that support terrorism. It makes no sense. Stop supporting these countries economically, militarily, in trade. And that forces them to stop and clean up the mess they've made. And then we should also support the rebuilding of infrastructures in the communities that we and those other allies were responsible for destroying. Go into Yemen and go into Iraq and Afghanistan, go into Syria and Libya and rebuild water systems, electrical grids and sanitation, septic systems, help them prepare food systems and housing so that they're not poor, desperate in their own countries, having nothing to do with anything they did wrong. It's just part of our regime change and geopolitical nature. I think that would go a long way to getting people to appreciate that there are those of us in America who are not war hawks. And then get councils of religious leaders to go in and show that all religions have points that can be misconstrued or taken out of context to justify violence, like the Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia and Sharia law. But there's also an awful lot that can be done to promote kindness and love and peace. And that's what we should focus on, and have the religious leaders in every country support that part of a religion and not the violent part. And then the citizens would be less likely to believe those the toxic parts of any religion. Those are just some ideas that I believe would make a difference. Here's my issue. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are both war hawks, and Hillary Clinton intends at least that what we have been led to believe, to consider a woman to be Secretary of Defense who is a hyper war hawk. So all we're going to have is a lot more conflict. Listen in.
Many news outlets and experts think Hillary Clinton will choose a woman named Michelle Flournoy to head up the Pentagon as Secretary of Defense. And this week, Flournoy went on record calling for more war. Specifically, at the Center for New American Security conference in Washington this week, she said she's for sending more American troops into combat against ISIS and the Assad regime than the Obama administration has been willing to commit. So, she wants to send more boots on the ground to the Middle East. Many U.S. officials have gone on record saying Flournoy's ideas could potentially only escalate problems. But Clinton herself has gone on record advocating Flournoy's warring ideas. Make no mistake, a vote for Clinton is a vote for more meddling and more bloodshed in the Middle East. She's criticized Obama for not unilaterally supporting Israel over Palestine, saying she'll be sure to strengthen ties with Netanyahu. She was the main driver behind the U.S. intervention in Libya, and we all know how great that worked out. And she stood at many a podium telling the world that the U.S. needs to be doing much more in Syria than we are now. Even the New York Times has pointed out how much more hawkish Clinton is than Obama. So it's no wonder that people are expecting Clinton to choose Michelle Flournoy, a war hawk champ, as her Secretary of Defense. A woman who uses euphemisms like military coercion as a nice way to say war. A woman who blames Russia and Syria for the bombing of innocent civilians while calling for more bombs herself. Because apparently, Flournoy's bombs will only kill bad guys. So everyone is speculating that Clinton will win the presidency, and then she'll choose Flournoy as Secretary of Defense, and then we'll have even more war than we do now. How that's possible, I don't know, but it's coming. So much for the Democrats for being the peace-loving anti-war party. In fact, so much for democracy in general, because you know what? Even though I hate it very much, all this speculation is probably right.
And now to finish our program today, we're going to have a little audio clip about people in Mount Rushmore. Now, we all know who's on Mount Rushmore and why it's there, but there are obviously some people who don't. And just imagine if they're this clueless about Mount Rushmore, how intelligent are they going to be about other important issues impacting us today? Let's listen in.
What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
I don't know.
Are you an American?
Yeah.
America. Okay, I'm going to have to revoke your citizenship.
Okay. It's okay.
What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
I don't know.
Are you an American?
Yes.
Were you born here?
Yes.
Okay. Mount Rushmore? Doesn't ring a bell?
No. Sorry.
Okay. What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
It's in, it's over in Asia. I think it's China, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I think it is.
You think Mount Rushmore over in China. Real quick.
What?
What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
I have no clue.
What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Kim Jong-un has attacked Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
And the question is, should we send troops over there as a response, or are we already spread too thin? What should happen in response to the attack on Mount Rushmore?
I think we shouldn't do anything. I think our troops are working hard enough. They need a break. Been in Iraq and Afghanistan for 15 years. I don't think we need to send our boys in.
And so to avenge the destruction of Mount Rushmore, you think that would spread us a little bit too thin?
Yeah, I think it spread us a little bit too thin. I think we should just stay in America and just worry about ourselves.
And, you know, pay attention to American issues and American history and American monuments.
We got plenty of stuff going on in America right now. We don't need to be worried about other countries.
Americans are so lost and out of touch, they don't even know what's going on in their own backyard, let alone what's going on halfway around the world. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, most people don't really watch the news. They don't really pay attention to what's going on.
I
they
know.
Just kind of worry about their own lives.
You said it. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
You think it was right for Kim Jong-un to destroy Mount Rushmore?
No. I don't think it's right for anybody to destroy anything that God created.
Anything we should do in retaliation to Kim Jong-un destroying Mount Rushmore?
I think Kim Jong-un should get what he deserved. You know, I mean, if he destroyed something, I think he should have something of his destroyed. Payback is something.
Any other comments on Mount Rushmore getting destroyed by Kim Jong-un?
No. That's it.
All right. Thank you. What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
I don't know.
You could guess.
I don't know. Thank you.
May have a good day. What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
India.
I don't know.
What country is Mount Rushmore located
in? I don't have time. I gotta go.
You do have time. Just real quick. What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
I don't have idea. I gotta go.
No idea.
Thank you.
Hold on.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry. Have a nice life. What country is Mount Rushmore located in?
I'm pretty sure it's here. Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
No, it's Russia, ain't it? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. He's smarter than I am. Check in.
What? Mount Rushmore's in the United States.
It is.
Yeah.
We're out of time there for everyone. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's show. Have a nice day, everyone.